Hi-Fi Dream, it's the deep dive. Blossoms, Blown Rose. Before that was Kajagoogoo, Hang On Now.
Mix it up a little bit there.
Man, Hang On Now is so good. Digging on that in here. And then following with a song from the 2000s by Blossoms, which was like a pretty popular fad in the UK about 6-8 years ago, maybe 8 now. Yeah. They remind me a lot of the groups that, like Kajagoogoo, the 80s new wave alternative groups, even Squeeze, who I have, you know, obviously love. But that was a nice little packet of British kind of infected soulful indie pop.
Yeah.
But very adult in the Kajagoogoo adult, what did I say?
Sophistipop.
Yeah. And Blossoms are kind of like what I would hope pop music would be more like. Not so reliant upon like heavy compressed beats and like, you know, 2 minute, 3 minute hooky songs. Like, I feel like that's what pop music should sound like. Well-written songs.
It's more of a, you describe, it's Britpop, right? Indie Britpop.
Yeah, it's piano-driven at times.
I think it's also what makes it so Britpop-y is the vocals. The vocals are very Manchester-sounding in the way they harmonize.
A lot of harmonies.
Yeah, and then the jangles, they got the right guitar. I guess it's the Britpop guitar. What is it, a Telecaster?
Yeah, it sounds like a Tele.
But the, or maybe the big, what's the big bodied one?
The Gibson. Hollow body?
The big Gibson. I don't know.
There's a semi hollow body, you know, Gibson.
Yeah, I think that one. But I picture the cover of the Material Issue band from the 90s.
I laughed because he's in here saying it reminds me of Material Issue.
I hear
that, by the way.
Yeah.
Material Issue had a little more of like an edge to them, like in a grungier kind of.
They start shouting, you know, Valerie Loves Me, right?
Definitely post punk.
Yeah.
But I think it's crazy because you mentioned that band.
I played them side to side, actually, and I think the vocals are in the same range, the instrumentally similar, and then the same kind of upbeat rhythm, and so it's pop.
So the fact that you just revisited that group.
And yeah.
So the British lady who you hear on Hi-Fi Dream between every song.
Dreaming,
you
know, and Sound.
Yeah, that is Samantha. Samantha, Sam Taser, her husband... was a part of Material Issue. And when she told me that, when I first started working, I knew she was from Chicago radio because Brad heard her growing up on, or like when he was in college and beyond, he used to hear on the alternative station in Chicago. I think it was B96 or one of this, whatever it was, station.
A DJ.
Yeah. Just like,
or
the voiceover person. Okay. Yeah. But he said she was British and I wanted a British voice, female.
Yeah.
And so we reached out and hoping she still did it. And It ends up Lance, her husband, replied to me and was like, yeah, we have like this production company or whatever. And then we got to talking, and next thing I know, she was like, my husband was, Lance was in a group, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what group? Material Issue. I was like, what? I was like, I just listened to them.
Small
and then
world.
And then was like, we had vibed on all music because he was like from that scene.
Yeah.
And I was into a lot of that. And like, you know, he's an alternative guy too. So all of us kind of got off on the whole idea that we were like, small world kind of idea. You
connection.
Bringing it up now, I'm almost like we should be playing them on our show.
I was a big fan of Material Issue, and I was considering picking one of their songs a long, long time ago, and I thought, it's a little bit too harsh for hi-fi.
I don't think it is.
But if we're playing this, if we're playing Blossoms...
Well, this isn't heavy.
No, but I guess the sound is similar. The song is definitely different, but I would put them almost in the same genre.
Yeah. I could see it's like, it's indie pop, and they were a little more, meaning Material Issue was a little more post-punk than this group.
Yes,
but I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like Arctic Monkeys and those kind of groups have a lot of that sort of abrasive punk energy.
Mm-hmm.
And this could sound like a more polished version of Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah.
I think they're better, but yeah. So I went into this. This was when it came out, I was all about this, and then I really stopped listening. And then their album came out after it that had a couple of really good songs. I think they're still doing it, but I just kind of really took a liking to that song specifically.
Well, it's a nice transition, I think, coming from the Kajagoogoo to the Britpop, and then we're going to kind of go more pop now, right?
We really are, but in a good way. I didn't even reply to this. I should say, my follow-up to your song really has nothing to do with your song.
That's fine.
To give you an idea. But talk about why you chose this. Lucas Estrada, James T.W., and Super High.
Yeah, it's a new release called Don't Look Down. And it's straight up a pop song.
It's a pop song.
So I'm a little guilty. It's a guilty pleasure, I would suppose, to call it
Did
that.
Did you just find this?
I just found it, and it's been in my to-do future shows list for quite a while. And every time I look at it, it's like, how about this week? How about this week? And I'm like, I don't think I'm ready to you know, throw the pop lever that soon. So I really wanted to play it. And then I actually said, well, let me just make a personal playlist of my own called, you know, Guilty Pleasure Pop. And two songs went in there. I'm like, that's not enough. You can't have a playlist with only two songs. And so I said, you know what? I'm just going to pick it this week and we'll get it over with, like, kind of, you know, pulling the splinter out or ripping the Band-Aid off. Let's go. And what I really like about it is I can really appreciate the lyrics. So it's a straight up song. It kind of starts like acoustic guitar, some finger snapping, very simple production, but they're lyrics that I can easily understand and they're very clearly presented. And
since when do you care?
I know, right? I think what it is if the lyrics aren't clear enough, I'm not going to pay attention.
Stay away from right.
But here, it starts off with lyrics, and so it's obvious I can pick this up. But the producer, James T.W., he was notable for a YouTube guy discovered by Shawn Mendes.
Oh.
And so these are kind of like the newer generation of singers, right, who are being discovered on social media and YouTube, and so this collaboration is kind of, it feels like that. It's new pop, but I think it's got a little bit of sophistication from the perspective of, it's not trying to be too complicated. It's just a simple song with simple lyrics. It's a love song, and I think it's something I could play, you know, you could play it at a campfire.
Yeah. Did you prepare an argument for what
I did
my
not prepare an argument.
See, you prepared an argument for Kaja Gugu.
I know.
And you didn't prepare one for
no,
this.
No, this one, I'm willing to take the hit. If you don't like it, that's quite all right.
Well, I'm going to listen. I'm not even going to give my opinion on it yet. I just wanted to know if you had an argument prepared for this, because
Nothing. This
one would be understandable if you were like, I don't know if Greg's going to be into this. I got to have an argument.
No, this one I feel so strongly about that I didn't care.
Okay, yeah. So this is going to be Lucas Estrada, James T.W., and Super High. It doesn't flow in any way. It's hard to even say all that. The song is called Don't Look Down. And I'm just going to pre-qualify this as this is not a sound you hear normally on this signal.
That's fair.
At all. It's very straight ahead. To me, this sounds like, if you told me this was in the top 10 on the Heat Seeker chart on the Billboard Hot 100, I wouldn't be shocked, because it sounds very much like in the pocket
of
pop music now.
It's true.
But I don't even need to say what I think about pop music now. And when we come back out, I'll talk a little bit about some of my reasoning why I'm missing that train. But this is this song. We're going to check it out. Followed by a song that was never considered a straight-ahead pop song, but in the early 80s on MTV, it was like a huge fad.
Right.
And a group that was sadly portrayed as like kind of a novelty, but they were as good as any group at the time. Let's do it, the Hi-Fi Dream Deep Dive.
All right.
Paradise, how come it feels like I'm in paradise? Every time I see that look in your eyes, it's like the sun coming up. Fan the flames, look back and forth the way we fan the flames, until we're burning all over. It's like it's never enough. Under the water, caught in the waves, watching the half light turn into morning. You gotta leave, but I wish you could stay. Just wanna pick you up and start again. How can I breathe when you're next to me? How can I see when I'm blinded by the stars? Get so high when you're close to me. Don't look down. I don't feel anything until your touch. Thought I had everything until you showed me love. I get so high when you're close to me. Don't look down. Fireflies, the sky is burning up with fireflies. They always come out at this time of night.
up and start again. How can I breathe when you're next to me? How can I see when I'm blinded by the stars? I get so high when you're close to me. Don't look down. I don't feel anything until your touch. Thought I had everything until you showed me love. I get so high when you're close to me. Don't look down.
Hi-Fi Dreams Deep Dive.
Dreams Deep Dive. That was Flock of Seagulls, Space Age Love Song. One of my Desert Island songs or whatever.
A Desert Island disc.
I have like different playlists, like Ultimate Cassette, Ultimate Digital, Ultimate Oldies, like the songs that defined me at different ages of my life.
Yeah.
This is on my one from like cassette Ultimate Cassette, which would be like all my favorite songs from like, say, like 8 years old to like 15 or 16.
So tell us why you were inspired at this time, at that age.
As a kid, even, I don't know. First of all, the MTV generation, we saw people for the first time. So when MTV came on, and now they had a song called Iran, So Far Away, which was massive. One that they're considered a one-hit wonder, which is criminal because they had bigger songs that came after. But because MTV presented this guy with this whack hair,
right?
He looked like a butterfly. His hair looked like a butterfly. It was typical when you think of 80s hair, this was the guy. He's the pinup for what 80s fashion, really.
Right.
And they were very fashion forward in their weirdness. He was a hairstylist before he was a singer. So his style was whole, like very, very fashion forward. But I took notice of this space vibe they had, this like outer space look. And the fact that the music was like upbeat, danceable, but also had this sort of beauty and like this open vastness to it. He sounded like he was singing into the distance, into the sky.
It's very atmospheric is the word.
I think his voice, he used his voice more as an instrument, like a typical keyboard or something, because he didn't oversing, he didn't sing too wordy. He kind of let his words breathe and sustain. And I think it was subconsciously years later when I started singing in bands, that was what I would do. I kind of used my voice
past the measure, right?
Yeah, hold notes. Extend. And I really took a nod from him, I believe, and especially when I listen back to those songs and know how important they were to me. This song, I remember seeing the video, and I thought it was more popular than it was because MTV played it a lot, but it didn't get played a lot on the radio at that time, but it was popular on MTV because they were so visual.
Yeah.
And their videos, you know, you couldn't help but watch how weird looking they were.
I kind of missed out on that visual because we didn't have MTV when that took off. I think we had MTV for maybe a month or two by accident. And then I think my parents said, it's just cost too much. So we didn't have cable.
Did you remember his look, though, his hair and everything?
Ironically, I do not. The only I heard of A Flock of Seagulls because I think kids at that time would listen, oh, who's your favorite band? You know, Flock of Seagulls was up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I was hip enough to actually know much of the music.
Do you know what it looks like now? Like when I say his hair?
Yes,
you know?
I have a couple of Flock of Seagulls albums, so I get it now. But I think the first reference to really how weird they were was from watching Pulp Fiction, right? Where Samuel L. Jackson says, hey, you Flock of Seagulls, come here.
That's right.
I'm like, why would you call it? Oh, okay, it must be the hair. And so it was, I feel like I missed a little bit of this boat. But I definitely know Ran So Far Away.
Even the Wedding Singer, they did the keyboardist in the Wedding Singer band on Adam.
He was trying to look
Sandler,
like him.
Had the hair.
So
same
that's
hair.
Unfortunately one of the movies that I also kind of missed.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show you that they were kind of pigeonholed as a novelty because of the hair.
Makes sense.
Which probably got them more famous than they should have been or could have been because of that. But it ended up being, and I think the band speaks to that. They were written off in a lot of ways when they didn't deserve to be written off.
Mm-hmm.
Nate and I talk about it all the time. About how like they were probably as good of a band at that time as any of their peers, even Duran Duran, who I think is also severely underrated in how they play. Not so much because they have a lot of hits and they made millions, but they were so much better than people gave them credit for. They thought of them as a pop act, and they really weren't just pop. And Flock of Seagulls was that band. But before that, we did your song, which was Lucas Estrada, James T.W., and Super High.
Oh yes,
Don't Look Down. I wanted to talk about this.
Let's talk about it.
I fully listened while we sat here. And I was very inclined to not like the song initially when I heard it 2 days ago.
Okay.
Just because it sounds like it's been done so many times. And it's not a knock on pop music so much now.
That's fair.
And in fact, I do take part of the blame for that because I think I'm less tolerant of certain styles because I'm like, what are they trying to do the same thing over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you that what I discovered I liked about it was I liked the melody a lot. The sincerity of the vocals and the lyrics even.
Sincere.
I like that I wish it wasn't so
basic.
Yeah, I wish they did something to kind of give it its own this look or flavor.
Okay.
To make it stand out from a lot of the songs that sound like this.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn Mendes type things, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm going to tell you, again, if I just wipe away the nonsense and the hype, it was a nice song, and I wasn't disengaged. I was listening to it.
Yeah.
And
I liked it. You gave it an intent listen, and I appreciate that.
And I liked it. And I remember last week, there 2 weeks ago, that song I didn't like at all.
Yes.
I couldn't even, the second, third time through, I was like, I just can't find it, you know, but I found it here.
Right.
And I think a lot of that is just like giving a song a shot, really listening.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't do that. I acknowledge it.
Yeah, but it's good that we have the space to do that, right?
Yeah.
To dive deep into it. And I listened to it again with now through your ears, like I was watching you listen to it and thinking about, okay, what kind of arguments can I come up with to defend this song? And I mentioned, I don't think I need to defend. I don't want to. I don't expect every song to be a winner. But what I still think about this song is it's not trying to be anything too unique, and it doesn't sound unique.
True.
But it's a sincere song, as you mentioned, and that's all enough. That's all it needs to be, I think. It doesn't need to be a hit necessarily, but it's nice to know that people can still make music that isn't necessarily trying to break the mold. It fits a mold. And it's good.
You could still make great music within a genre, within a style.
It won't evolve the genre into any direction, but I don't think pop really ever does.
I used to hate when people would give me, like friends would give me music of their children or like friends of theirs, like especially when the label was really active and I was signing people.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was like, oh, I got to play my friend's band or my friend's son's band or whatever. And I'd be like, okay. I didn't like it because I hated that I had to be honest and I didn't want to ever be like, well, listen, your kid's got no talent. Yeah. I wouldn't do that. You know, so I had to really listen and I had to come up with some kind of a response.
I see.
And most times I prepared myself for the worst.
Okay.
But I tried to find things within those songs that I could point out that are great. So I could be like, what I would do is this. And like to get him to the point where he's ready to be signed, like I think these are the things they should focus on. But this is what's really good about them.
I see.
And they should embrace this stuff. Or at least something productive.
What makes you different, right?
So, but I was preparing always to like, you know, not really like it. And how am I going to spin this?
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's important. You should listen to things sometimes, especially like when it's important to somebody else. That's important to you. So you're like, I got to do it for this person.
Yeah.
But there's so much music out there. So this is my point of the day that I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
And since we have two more songs left and a little bit of time, I'm going to bring it up now. I watched a video yesterday of Seal at Amoeba Records in San Francisco called What's in My Bag. Have you ever seen that show?
Oh, yeah. Love that show.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I love it. And there was an episode I didn't see with him from months ago. He had a whole bunch of records, and I was really excited to see what he had to say because I really respect Seal. He came up earlier on the show, which is
right.
That wasn't coincidental. He's been on my mind because of this. So he brought something up about the relationship with music, and he said that nowadays the younger people don't have a value attached to music, which is what I've been saying to you for a while. They don't. They're almost offended at the thought, young people. I'm even talking your kids' age, and it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost offended at the idea of paying for music because it's always there for nothing.
Right.
Why would you pay for something? If you have free water, we did this as a society, but if you have free water, why are you going and paying for a bottle?
Mm-hmm.
But oxygen's free. Are you going to go pay for oxygen? You know what I mean? So there's sort of a smart part of that. But what he said was when he was a kid, and this goes to us, he's a little older than us, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he said he used to have to save money to go buy that record. And you didn't get to buy more. You didn't have enough to buy more than one a month, maybe, right?
Okay, yeah.
So you went to the store and you had to figure out which record you wanted.
That's right.
You paid and it was coming out of your pocket. It was allowance money. It was you mowed a lawn. You cleaned the dishes. You did the laundry to get that money.
Right.
You had to choose right. And when you chose, you're stuck with it.
Right.
So there was a value attached to it.
That's right.
It cost me money. So I might listen to this album and I'm going to really listen and my friends are going to sit and listen and we're going to really get into it and probably listen many times because it's not like you had unlimited options. You had what you had. You had 10, 20, 30 records.
Or listen to the radio.
Or listen to the radio.
That was your choice.
So you made your decision after listening to the radio of what you wanted to go buy and hear more of.
Right.
But when you got that record, it meant something because you paid for it and it was value. And no matter what, it's a thing in your hands.
It's yours.
It's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you didn't love it the first listen, you're more patient with it, which I kept missing this all along.
I gotcha.
You were more patient because you knew I have this record now.
It's mine.
I can't do anything about it.
I should learn to like it. Yeah.
I'm going to keep listening. And then eventually you found songs like, oh, this is a great song. And he brought up the album track. Back now it's a singles market. But back then, you bought the record because of We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions, right?
Two, yeah.
But then you bought the Queen record and those were the two hits. And then you heard Spread Your Wings, and you know that would never be a radio song because it's a long, slow burner or whatever, but you were open to, you didn't care that it wasn't a radio song. It's yours now. That's your song on that album.
Yeah.
And that's the way music was back then. That gave you like a relationship with the artist. You held the art in your hand. You looked at the liner notes. You read who wrote the song, how long the songs were, what the lyrics were. It was an
way
immersive,
more
intimate
experience. Relationship.
Now there's not. After CDs went away, you don't have that relationship anymore.
There's not even the sense of possession, really.
Right? Even if you buy an MP3, what does that mean?
Right. And so the people, even that's crossover of people who bought CDs and ripped them, they don't even want the CD anymore, right? And so there's no real true possession. You've got a copy of it. You could listen to it live, stream it anytime on YouTube. So you don't really even have to listen to your own copy. Which is, it's a shame, really.
And you know, for a while there, dude, they every album you bought vinyl would have the download card in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually have the music on your computer or whatever. Yeah. They stopped even doing that. Records no longer, I'd say less than 20% of the records I buy, don't have the download codes anymore. They stopped doing it at some point. Huh. Mostly because people subscribe to services. They don't store their music on a computer like they used to.
So it's not worth setting
iTunes
up.
Went away. So, I mean, it's no longer iTunes is no longer a downloading service the way it used to be, where you would store your music on your computer that way. You could still download, but it's just different. And what he did was he described something that I've been trying to put into words for years. Why there's where's the perceived value and when did it go away? And I think he's right. Your investment into the group or the record forced you to be patient with it. We lost patience because why? I heard this song, Don't Look Down, yesterday, 2 days ago.
Right.
If you didn't play it again today, I would never have listened to it again.
Right.
Not because it was the worst song I ever heard, but there's 100 million I haven't heard yet.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I go back to a song that I didn't love?
Right.
But if I listened the second time and liked it a little more, what would happen
chance.
The third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh time?
Yes.
If I was forced and that was the only record I had,
I gotcha.
I might fall in love with that song eventually. Right. So that part of music and how we listen to music and receive music is so different. I don't know how it ever gets back. And it's sad to say that.
Well, they should change the thumbs down to more like a vote down, but then it won't remove it until you get 5 votes down. You have to reject it 5 times before it goes away.
But you understand that, and I do certainly understand why we don't go back to music we didn't like on the first listen. But and I'm definitely going to say I'm in the probably the highest percentage category of like listening to music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I still am guilty of not liking something and not going back to it.
Well, your time is valuable. Your music time is valuable, right? The time that you, if you're not listening to music, you're probably not doing your job. And so if you spend time listening to something that you already reject, then you're not spending time on listening to music that you could like.
That's a good point.
That could be good for the station, right? And so I think it's a little different for you as far as your time that you value, as far as listening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. But as a listener and as a consumer, which I am.
You are a consumer as well.
I deserve to have those times where I'm listening for me, right?
Right.
I do listen to a lot of music during the daytime, like when I'm working. Like yesterday, 2 days ago, I spent probably 7 or 8 hours just looking up new music, right?
Yeah.
Finding new things.
Uh-huh.
And that was all for Hi-Fi and for Bali.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to find new music that I wanted to put in.
Yeah.
But if I listen at night, I found Lee for James at 12 o'clock on Friday night because I was looking for something, you know, off of another artist. And then that was for me.
Right.
So, and then hopefully it moves into the other categories where I could play it on the station like today.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there is a part of it where it's my job, but I'm guilty of not going back to songs and even albums, right? So like Interpol is one of my favorite groups of the last 20 years and they had a new album last year. And I didn't love it. And I listened to it. I bought it. I bought the record. And I listened to it many times. Or not many. A couple times. But then I kind of just found the songs I like on the album. And now I've listened to those few songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been listening to the others. Yet the 15 or 10 year old version of me would have probably listened to those songs more and more and more. And maybe those songs would become my favorite songs.
Right.
That happened with music back then. Now, I don't think it's even possible to happen.
Well, I think it is possible because of this resurging trend of vinyl. So that is one hope, right?
That's the great hope.
And even just last week, I follow Streetlight Records on their Facebook page, and they do a lot of new release listening parties.
Yeah, shout out to them.
You can go in and be a part of an experience where there you get to hear firsthand the new released album of the band with other fans like fans. And so everyone's in there.
That Omar Apollo dude you saw.
That's right.
His new album is all over the place.
It's blowing
right now.
Up now.
You stumbled on him at the record store.
It was because of Streetlight. And yeah. It was because they brought together, they made it an event. And these are the things that how it used to be for us, right? You would have to go to the store to get the new album. And so even though you don't have to do that today, there are still a class of people who want to do that. And they come out in, you know, the 50s and the 20s of people or 50 people or maybe sometimes 100 if it's a big band. And it's happening. So I think there is some hope, but it's going to be a rebirth. And maybe it's going to be in a different scale because we can consume media so many different ways. But the physical form, it's getting a second life in a small way.
And that's important. And I'm in that world. You're in that world. Yeah. And we do.
And they're hella expensive. And so the kids
the
will
problem.
Value.
There is value. So that I was at the record store last weekend, Streetlight, speaking of.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of young girls, and they kept going through, and they were picking an album each.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they kept pointing out the ones they were seeing, and they're like, look, they have this. And it was very common music, but, like, it was cool. They would, like, pull out the Strokes or something different for them, and they'd be like, look, they have this. But they were spending a lot of time, matter of fact, all the time I was there trying to figure out what album they were going to buy.
That's perfect.
And they spent, so that proved that like they need to spend their money on this.
Yeah.
But, and that part of it's great. So you buy the vinyl, you spend the time with it. Maybe those records you spend more time with.
Yeah.
But I do think that the digital age of music listening, and that's having everything at your fingers on Spotify or YouTube or whatever title.
Right.
That's changed the value of music.
It
and
has.
I don't know how we get back. I really don't, but I hope it does. But that's the hope is that people get attached to the format that does give them ownership of it, like you said.
I saw an ad for a tape deck, like a portable Walkman now, that you can put tapes in, and it's rechargeable, so that's new. And it has Bluetooth, so that's new.
This is cool.
Yeah, but you can buy a Walkman now. You know, it's a Kickstarter of some kind for maybe $150. And that's kind of like, well, who's actually going to do that, right? But the
you just triggered something. I'm so glad you just said that.
Yeah.
Because there was one other point I wanted to make in this, and you triggered it.
Okay.
I think part of the experience of not is that we don't make cassettes, mixtapes, or CDs anymore. Mixed CDs.
Right.
I used to do. It was an art form for us, right?
Yeah.
You made a cover. You had to pick your songs in the order, and you give it to somebody.
Yeah.
Even me, I did that all. As a child, mm-hmm. all the time. I had mixtapes all over the place.
Right.
For every mood. Mm-hmm. CDs, same thing.
Yeah.
Even till I was in my late 20s, I was doing mixed CDs, right?
Yeah.
Then it became off of CDs off the computer. I burned CDs off the computer, right?
Yeah.
Off iTunes. We don't do that anymore. We can't. There's no, like,
there's
I can't
no
make,
way to
there's
do
no
that.
Even, I can't make a mixtape anymore. I don't even know how I would do it with my equipment.
Right.
I can't do it, burn CDs anymore. Like, where
you
would
don't
I
have CD
Yeah, I don't
players
have a CD burner anymore.
Yeah.
So
true.
That part of it is, I think, part of the crucial step missing is you can't even make your own keepsake.
Right. So we actually have to blame the industry.
What could we do to change it? I don't know. Maybe you and I should think of an idea.
It's the Kickstarters, I think. It's the fact that there is a Walkman that you can buy today, a modern Walkman, means that there's still a demand.
I'm gonna look for that.
Yeah.
Cassettes.
Yeah. And it comes with a blank cassette too.
One cassette. Good, Zach, gonna do me.
The problem is you can't buy new tapes anymore.
But can
right?
you record on the Walkman? Like
yeah.
can you record
it's gotta
from
record.
A record player?
Like yeah.
you go direct?
You can.
Oh.
You
okay.
can, but you need, you know, you'll need more than that to do a mixtape.
Oh. We should try and come up with some kind of a, you're an engineer, we could figure something out. Let's come up with the game changer.
Okay.
For all the kids so they could get what we had and that relationship with music that's missing for sure now. Okay, that was good. A little topical.
It's very topical.
Detour, but I'm so happy we talk about it because this has been on my mind. I don't understand why value has been lost with music, and that Seal, of all people, totally nailed it.
Yeah,
to me,
that's great.
All right, we got two more songs left. This is cool. All right, so this is goes back to Donna Lewis. Tell us about Romy from the XX, by the way.
Yeah, I've been a fan of XX for the last several months, and I love Romy's voice. Every song I've heard her sing, whether it's the XX or with her own individual work, something about her voice belongs in house, in the house music genre. I mean, she's great with the indie rock of XX as well, but in house music, with any beat, her voice, something about it, it defines this new sound of house music, almost like Rosala from the 90s. Like, I expect this sound, this feeling from her, and I don't know what it is, whether it's her range or the way she breathes, I'm not sure. But I saw her perform at Primavera Sound, and she debuted this single, Always Forever, which sounds like a cover of the Donna Lewis song from the 96, which we referenced earlier. And it has some of the same lyrics, but I think there's also some original lyrics. So it's like a
hybrid.
Yeah, exactly. And when I heard it at Primavera Sound, I said, well, it's an okay song, but you know, it's an okay thing for her to do, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But it's a catchy tune that I think a lot of people can relate to. And hearing it in this more modern environment and modern treatment, a little bit faster in Romy's voice, and I think also in the context of who Romy is, she's, you know, very... she's a proponent for, you know, women who love women. And this song, if you put it in that context of a woman singing about a woman, it's a modern way to kind of think about it and to listen to it. So I think that's cool. And I think this would relate to the younger generation.
I compare her, Romy, to Tracy Thorn. To me, they're... matter of fact, I confuse them at times, vocally, and just like as when I visualize them, I'm kind of picturing each other.
Yeah.
Tracy Thorn is the singer of Everything But the Girl, is the singer of Everything But the Girl. Mm-hmm. They started off as more of a pop group, like very classical kind of pop sound, like nothing electronic. Then they had the big hit with Missing, right? Todd Terry remix of Missing. And their whole sound shifted to electronic.
Okay.
And they were amazing at electronic. Drum and bass they were amazing. They did trip hop. And a lot of that had to do with her doing vocals for Massive Attack.
Right.
And then ended up like opening them up to new music and new sounds.
Right.
But they started off very mellow, sophistopop, acoustic, almost like cafe music, right? Mm-hmm. Then they changed. She had the voice of an angel. Wasn't in Indeed. Any way marketable from a looks perspective. She just didn't have pop star looks. And this isn't a knock. I'm not saying anything, because to me, I don't have it either. You know what I mean? But there wasn't a pop star sensibility to her. She was very, very different looking, you know, off like a poet, and
right.
beat poet, kind of very grungy looking in a way, but not sellable. They didn't need to sell it because her voice was so good. She was an angel.
Yeah.
And then Romy comes along in the XX, and mm-hmm. it's sort of the same thing. They weren't marketable because neither of her... or Oliver Sim, who's the other vocalist in the XX, or Jamie XX,
right.
had this poster look that would be sellable on a pop market. But nice. The music was so good, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So they kind of had this guy-girl vocal thing going, and it was perfect trade-offs.
It works for them, yeah.
Sort of down-tempo mm-hmm. guitars and beats, and really cool, different. Mm-hmm. But now she's gone solo, and now I feel she's definitely leaning into her Tracy Thorn, and I love her voice. But I've been disappointed by her solo stuff lately because mm-hmm. I feel like it's so vanilla.
It's house.
For her. Yeah. But it's not even, it's like not house. Jamie XX doing his stuff
yeah.
separate is house. It's electronic. It's drum and bass. It's
oh, okay.
super crazy. I feel like he should be producing her music, her writing. Her music sounds like I could do that on a Roland 505. In one presetting, like just hit one button and just kind of sing over it, maybe add some keys.
Yeah.
I just think she's so much better than that. She plays bass, she plays guitar. Like, where's the music?
You want more.
I just think she's capable. She's not going to top XX.
Correct.
Doing what she's doing this way, but they are very accessible. I play a bunch of them. The song "The Sea" is beautiful. Yeah, I'm playing that a while.
I think they're going to work on a new album too.
But I think when I heard this, I was like, "This is such like what do they call it? Low hanging fruit."
Yeah.
It was already a massive hit. She stole the hook from this song that's been played 100 billion times.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why. I wouldn't play it on Hi-Fi because I felt like, what is she? This is too easy. There's better songs by her I could play from her last album.
Okay.
Then I saw it pop up on your sheet, and I was like, I guess I gotta listen to this. Let me see, you know, because I listened to it last 2 weeks ago when it came out, and I was just like, nope, not playing this, even though I love Romy.
Okay.
And I love her sound and her voice, especially. Yeah. I'm not playing it. And then I saw it on your list. I'm like, I'm gonna listen again. And then, you know, it is a good song. I'm not denying it. I just thought it was too easy.
It goes with the Don Lewis pick, though. So that's kind of a great tie back. Yeah.
And I'm also glad we're playing it. Let people make their decision. I always say that. This shouldn't be me deciding. Unfortunately, I am the final guard to get music through. But this, let people decide themselves, and that's fair. I wouldn't have gone through the trouble to put it in because I didn't like it that much at first. But now people will have a chance to hear it, and I kind of dig that. Let you make the choice.
Cool.
And you loved it, or you liked it. So
I like it.
It's you could side with me. You could side with Wilson. You might get in between. But let's play the song, and that's going to be... Wait, I'm sorry. That song first, and then it's going to be Mac DeMarco, Total Left Hand Turn, a song on the level from This Old Dog.
Which Turn was, Down the Knobs, basically.
And it, I was telling you in my writing, but it reminds me of like 80s ballads, like Phil Collins' One More Night, Crazy for You, Madonna. You know what I'm talking about? That certain Berlin, sound
take
in
my
the
breath
80s.
Away. Yeah.
Those power ballads that, but they weren't loud or whatever. It was more like One More
Heavy
Night.
Heavy synth.
Yeah.
But slow tempo. And deep, kind of deep notes, like... Whoa, 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 whoa,
and the 80s sounds, right? The sounds you heard in a lot of 80s music.
Yeah, I heard that.
Analog equipment.
Caught that.
And also the sort of yacht rock stuff, like that sort of Doobie
vocals.
Brothers. Like, yeah, it's just kind of laid back, easy going.
Yeah.
Late summer, or like early evening, late afternoon kind of vibe out on the yacht. Is like sort of soft.
I get that.
So I love this track. I'm very in between on Mac DeMarco, but this song is
it's
ridiculous.
Very Hi-Fi Dream.
And there's a drum and bass version that I play on the station that's
more
up tempo.
Oh, you don't play this version?
I play the more up tempo version.
Oh, okay.
This is the album cut. It's better for me, but okay. I think the version we play on Hi-Fi is more suitable for the sound.
Interesting. I could have pictured this version as well.
Now that I know you say that, maybe I will put it in and pack it. It's a play every other time.
You know, every song that I pick, I try to picture that song coming from behind the Hi-Fi Dream logo with the pink
and the
white.
You always say that. I love
blue.
That.
That's kind of my last visual test.
It's a good one.
This one fits. It fits. And I agree. I think the Romy song fits as well, but in a different way.
Well, let's listen. Let's make that assessment now.
Okay.
Two more songs. Thank you, dude.
Thank you. It was a great show.
We'll see everybody back for show 44 next week on Hi-Fi Dream.
The Deep Dive.
Hi-Fi Dreams Deep Dive.
Fall onto my fire.